I was the first man in history to climb Kilimanjaro whilst carrying a fridge on my back.
Introducing Michael Copeland, aka the Fridge Man.
If I would have failed Kilimanjaro, it would have devastated me. I needed something to represent the burden of poor mental health and something to get people talking. And I could encourage men to start taking on challenges, give men a purpose and give them something to aim for. That is one thing I could be proud of.
Welcome to the Rockman Podcast, the podcast for those with a deep desire to test and further their limits and live healthier lives with mental fortitude. Hear inspirational stories and get lessons in resilience from those who have conquered the world's toughest challenges in running, adventure and life. I'm Terry Rosman, Rockman founder, and today we're exploring the topic of physical challenges and how they serve as a coping mechanism for mental health struggles. If you want to stay up to date with new podcast releases and help us grow, be sure to hit the subscribe button below. And if you find any value in this podcast, we'd appreciate your support in spreading the word. You can help us reach more people by giving us the thumbs up, leaving us a comment, or sharing it with a friend. Thank you. Remember, this podcast is brought to you by Rockman, the ultimate weekly running challenge platform. Test and further the limits of your physical and mental resilience around your everyday life all year round against weekly running challenges inspired by the world's most infamous tests. There's no fixed schedules, no equipment required, no far-off travel, no extortionate entry fees. All you need is a pair of running shoes and to remember where you live. So if you're feeling trapped in the cycle of comfort, risking the loss of your true potential, Rockman is the answer for you. You can get started right now for free by clicking the link in the show notes below. Today, we have the honor of welcoming a true pioneer of resilience and mental health advocacy. He's not just a former soldier, but a relentless adventurer who has conquered some of the world's most daunting challenges while carrying a symbolic burden on his shoulders. From scaling Snowdon with a fridge full of beer to ascending the mighty Kilimanjaro with said fridge strapped to his back, his feats have captured the imagination of people around the world. But behind these extraordinary accomplishments lies a profound message about mental health. Please welcome Michael Copeland.
Good afternoon. How are we doing?
I'm very well. How are you, Michael? You've just gone back. You were just saying 2 weeks you've been back now since your big Kilimanjaro world record attempt.
Yeah. I've been straight back into the swing of it. No rest.
Is it like crash back down to earth now? You're back going to work, back to family matters.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Every time I do a big challenge, I always get quite down afterwards. Obviously, it's an amazing achievement, you know, and I'm proud of what I've done, but it's kind of like that, what do I do now kind of thing.
So people don't know, explain to the listeners what you actually did. It a world record, right?
Well, yeah, I'm the first person to ever do it. Whether we can actually make it a world record with Guinness Book of Records, I don't know. It's obviously a money-making thing. I was the first man in history to climb Kilimanjaro whilst carrying a fridge on my back to represent the burden of poor mental health.
So many people have tried before, I imagine. There's been many people attempting that with fridges on their back, right? But they've all failed. Or are you the first person?
I have no clue, to be honest. I know someone attempted to do it in 2017 with a washing machine, but when I looked into it, it wasn't one person, it was 30.
30 people?
And they all, 30 people, and they all took turns. And the actual, there was a teacher who set out to do it, and he couldn't complete it in the end. So all 30 of them took turns carrying it up, and I don't think it had the concrete in the bottom either.
This sounds like there's a joke in there somewhere. How many teachers does it take to carry a washing machine up Kilimanjaro?
Exactly.
So explain the challenge then. You had a fridge. Was it full of beer or was it concrete, you said? What was it?
No, the fridge was actually had my kit inside it. So I didn't want the porters to carry, obviously, my hiking day pack that obviously I'd take anyway. So, yeah, inside the fridge was obviously my normal hiking day pack with my waterproofs, my warm kit, my lunch, water that I'd need for the day, my first aid kit and everything I'd take on a hike. So, yeah, the fridge empty was 19 kilo. And then however heavy my day pack was as well inside.
How heavy do you reckon it was altogether?
Over 25 kilo.
25 kilo. And we, awkward as well, right? It's like an awkward shape.
Yeah, people keep saying, oh, it's not that heavy. And no, you know, for me, an ex-soldier, you know, back in the day when I was in the army, I was carrying, you know, 120 pounds, maybe even more when I was on exercise or on operations. So, you know, the weight for me is not that much, but it's the awkwardness. The weight isn't on your shoulders. The weight is actually at the back of the fridge. So you can't actually stand up straight. You, any ex serviceman will tell you, if you've got a fully loaded burger, you know, you need help someone getting it on your back. And it's kind of similar with this because the weight was all at the back. It was just very, very awkward. You can't stand up straight. And when you do, it feels like it's pulling you backwards and tearing your abs apart. So it's just an awkward thing to lug around.
How long did it take? How many days were you out there for?
We did an eight day route. But the eighth day is basically just coming down off the mountain, basically a 2-hour hike. But because of the altitude, obviously you have to climb slowly. So it took us six days ish to get to the summit, and then literally you can roll back down in a day and a half.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You can come back down quite quickly.
Yeah, and how did it feel to get to the top? Was it a proper slog then?
You know what? I'm gonna be straight honest. You know, I've trained for 5 days a week, 15, 20 years. And I always train quite hard. So the first 5 days I was thinking, oh, this ain't really that hard. This isn't really much of a challenge for me. But then day six and day seven, we started getting higher. And to be honest, day six, we went up to 4,800 meters and we stopped at that camp. And then at that camp, we had an early lunch, an early tea, and then we literally got to bed, had a few hours sleep, and then we were up again at midnight and we started hiking at 1 o'clock in the morning on 3 hours sleep for 6 hours, freezing cold, all the way up to the summit, which is obviously just under 6,000 meters. And then when we got to the summit, it was like minus 12, minus 15. And then we had to hot foot it all the way back down to 3,100 meter camp. So on the actual summit day, we did 30 kilometers with a fridge on my back with 3 hours sleep in the middle of the night, minus 15. So, you know, it was definitely more of a mental resilience challenge for me. Do you know what I mean? But, it was the last 2 days were the challenge, I think.
I suppose if you've got this physicality about yourself already, what was the challenge mostly in the mind then?
100%. Yeah, I think all challenges are in the mind. I mean, you know, we have this saying in the army, forgive the swear word, but there's 7 P's, prior planning and preparation prevents piss poor performance. Now, that has always stuck with me ever since I left the army, because everything that I do, I always feel that as long as I can control everything that I can control, there's no point worrying about anything else. So worrying about my mindset, my fitness, that's all I could control. So, you know, to train for it, I climbed a mountain every weekend for 4 months before I went. I also ran twice a week and I did weights 4 days a week. So I was literally, you know, maybe one day off a week leading up to it. So I started training late November. And obviously pretty much every weekend I've climbed a different mountain in the UK.
Yeah, you did Snowdon first, right? Was that one of your first charity?
Yeah, two years ago. That was when I first started this and I first kind of put it out there. I basically started the challenge with saying, you know, I suffer with overthinking a lot and I never feel I'm good enough. I always, you know, I always struggle with that kind of thing, you know what I mean? Never feeling I'm doing enough. So I put it out there to people, anyone that's struggling with their mental health could come with me and climb Snowdon. And anyone that does come with me, I will carry a beer inside the fridge for them. So we could celebrate when we get to the top, basically. So that's me thinking, oh, only five people turn up. So 30 people turn up. So I had to fill the, I had to fill the beer with beer. And so, yeah, that was quite tough. That was 38 kilos.
That's heavy.
And that was on the hottest day of the year.
Hottest day of the year, because that can really ramp up the difficulty. It can really ramp up the difficulty with hydration and stuff like that. Do you have?
Yeah, I took three t-shirts with me and I drenched all three of them. So I drank about 6 liters of water and I was still dehydrated. So yeah, it was a tough challenge. But you know what? It was just the same again. You know, it was tough, but same again. I think it was mental. It's forgetting about the pain. And, you know, having an objective and cracking on with it regardless. And as long as you see it through, you know what I mean? You're not going to be left wanting.
Yeah. How important do you think it is of taking on a challenge that stands out? Because obviously there's something novel about your challenge. That there's a fridge on your back. It makes it interesting. With everyone doing half marathons, marathons and ultra marathons nowadays, how important do you think it is to put your twist on these things to stand out?
Massive. I mean, like people from the charity have asked me, you know, I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but, you know, I've done well for the last three challenges I've done. I've raised, you know, nearly £35,000 in less than 2 years. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, standing out, making a statement. I mean, you know, I'm not knocking anyone that does a marathon because, you know, a marathon's hard, ultra's hard, you know, 5K's hard for the right people, but everyone does that. Everyone does a marathon. Everyone does a, you know what I mean? You've got to stand out. And the thing for me was, if I want to raise awareness for mental health, if I wear a t-shirt, say Mountains for Mental Health on the front of it, and I go climb Snowdon, not one person's going to know why I'm there. No one's even going to speak to me and ask me what I'm doing. Whereas with the fridge, it's almost like I'm carrying a giant billboard. What I'm doing. So normally you do a running challenge or whatever, you know, in that kind of thing, and you're going to get your friends and your family sponsoring you, and you might get a few strangers sponsoring you, end off. You know what I mean? Whereas this, every time I went out training, now I did the same for Snowdon. You know, I trained, you know, 3 months before Snowdon. I did the same for the National Three Peaks last year. I did the National Three Peaks in under 24 hours with the fridge last year. And I did exactly the same for that. I actually trained harder for that than the actual Three Peak Challenge. So I think it's massively important. If you want to get it out there and raise more money, you need to stand out in terms of your challenge. So, you know, yeah, do a marathon. If you want to do a marathon, but try and put some sort of own twist on it to something that means something to you.
Does it excite you then? But adding this sort of level, this interesting aspect to it, does that make you more excited and up for the challenge?
Yeah. I mean, it's something different, isn't it? I mean, like, I was, when I left the army, I kind of lost myself a bit with, you know, my mental health. I kind of just thought, yeah, is this it? Like, you know, I've just been a part of this massive organisation, this family, this brotherhood. You know, I was doing all these cool things and then all of a sudden I'm, you know, and this is no knock to family life whatsoever, because, you know what I mean, I love my family to bits, but, you know, for someone like me who struggles to sit still, who I've always got to be improving or doing something, you know, just getting out of the army and then bang, you're back in 9 to 5, home life, and it's like, it's just really boring to me, you know what I mean? And I got quite depressed, so I started bodybuilding, and that's give me that discipline, that structure, the routine that I had in the army. It gave me all that back. So, yeah, I competed as a bodybuilder for 10 years as well. So that kind of, you know, taught me a lot about myself, especially with the dieting. I mean, I don't know if you know much about bodybuilding, but the
Can you tell by the look of me? Yeah.
Bodybuilding is 100% about mental resilience. And, you know, I'm not going to say physically, because I think a marathon is harder than, you know, going lifting some weights. But, you know, a marathon runner would probably argue the opposite. But for me, lifting the weights is fun. Do you know what I mean? I enjoy that. I enjoy that kind of training. But the diet is absolutely like, you know, when you're trying to gain size, you're force feeding yourself. I was eating 6 meals a day. I was eating 4,500 calories clean, as well as eating a couple of cheat meals a week. And you get to the point where you're on your third meal and you're full, and your fourth, your fifth, and your sixth meal are being force fed. So that's obviously really tough. And that's putting strain on your body as well. And then when you go the flip side and you start compete and you start getting ready to compete and you're doing a cutting diet, you know, you start pulling calories away. Your food slowly gets less and less. Your carbs get lower and lower. And all of a sudden, you know, 3-4 weeks out from a show, I'm trying to do cardio, weights 5 times a week, go work, family life on 50 grams of carbs a day, which is, you know, ridiculous. It's nothing when I look back, you know, how I did it now. You know what I mean? Mental resilience is a massive thing with bodybuilding. I think if you can't take yourself to that dark place mentally, you know, bodybuilding ain't for you, because when you're dieting, it is a tough game.
I've always thought that I feel like I'm a pretty resilient, mentally strong person, but if I'm tired or I'm hungry, I'm just put that. Yeah. I'm not. I'm really not. I can get grumpy. I can snap and stuff like that. How much of a strain did that put on sort of you and your relationships and your family?
Oh, I think me and my wife got divorced about 20 times when I was competing. Not literally, but my wife's always been very supportive. You know, we had a child together very young. We were both 16 at the same time as I joined the army when I was 16. So, you know, she's always been my rock, really. And she kind of knows how I am. She knows when I'm not doing nothing. I go very quiet and very in myself. Do you know what I mean? And I think she knows when she just tells me, she just go to the gym. Just go for a run, go to the gym. But, you know, I think I've got to that point now in life where I don't need to tell myself to go to the gym. I need to tell myself to have a rest, because I actually struggle to have a rest. I find when I'm resting, I should be doing something. I feel like I'm going backwards. And I know that's for a lot of people, it's like silly, but I think it's just the way, you know, the way I've programmed myself for so many years.
And how do you manage that?
I tried to train. I was training 6 days a week when I was competing, when I was bodybuilding, all weights plus cardio as well. So obviously, be doing walking with that as well. But no, since I stopped competing in 2020 and started hiking more, and I built a camper van, and we started traveling the UK and, you know, finding all these hidden gems, doing a lot more walking, I've kind of relaxed a bit in terms of, you know, I'm not bothered about, you know, missing a meal if I've got to go out or got to do this. Whereas competing days, I wouldn't go anywhere. I was like a monk. If, you know, the wife would say, "Oh, should we go here?" I've got to eat in half an hour, and that would be my life. Do you know what I mean? And I know to some people you think, "Oh, that's sad," but that's the mindset I had. If I'm doing something, I'm all in. I can't be half in, half out. I've got to be 100%, because I'm not all in, I don't give everything that I can give, I'll just be disappointed in myself. Whereas if you do give everything you can give, you train hard and win easy, whether you win or lose, it doesn't really matter. Do you know what I mean? If you put everything into it, you're going to be satisfied with yourself. And I always said that with bodybuilding. As long as I stuck to my diet for 12 weeks, I didn't cheat, I hit every training session, did all my cardio, win, lose or draw. If the guy's better than me, the guy's better than me. You can't beat genetics, but I'll never be outworked. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose that's it. If you did, say, skip a meal, eat something you shouldn't have, if you came second, that is what would be eating you up. That's what would be, like, it's because of that.
100%. That would be just playing on my mind. And it's the same now. Like, if I would have failed Kilimanjaro, you know, it would have devastated me. But in my head, I've literally worked tirelessly for so long. And you said at the beginning, like, you've seen me, you know, you've seen me everywhere, because I have literally been everywhere. Every weekend I was meeting with different groups of, you know, mental health walkers. meeting with different groups of people who wanted to go walk with me and getting myself out there. Do you know what I mean? I didn't have a rest for 3 months.
Yeah. It's an honourable message that you're spreading. I mean, obviously, you started off in the military and you said that you left and it sort of opened you up to a lot of mental health issues. Firstly, sort of, what did the military mean to you? And then what was the extent? How bad did it get then for you when you left?
Well, for me, you know, I never really had a tough time in the military, to be honest. I mean, I was in, you know, I went to Bosnia, did a short tour of Iraq, and then I basically got out. I did 8 years, so I didn't do very long. But I don't think I realised when I was a child, I don't think I realised, you know, the sort of characteristics that I've got. My dad's got ADHD, my brother's got ADHD, and, you know, I've 100% got a lot of those characteristics. But I've never been to kind of do anything about it, because I believe what I'm doing, you know, is the best medicine anyway. You know, exercise and outdoors is working for me. So, you know, I don't need to put a label on it. But no, when I left the army, I actually left because when I was 16, when I joined, I said me and my wife had a child when we were 16. And I was in training, basic training, when she was due to give birth. And I got a call saying that, you know, she was in labour. And this was a Thursday night. So the Friday morning, the company sergeant major basically said to me, listen, you can go home, get the train now from the guards depot in Birbright. And as long as you're back Sunday night, you know, you can carry on with your training. You won't be back squatted. If you don't come back, you'll have to do all your training again. So I've just been absolutely beasted and hammered for the last 10 weeks. Do you know what I mean? At the guards training depot in Purbright. And anyway, I got back to my hometown, Stafford, where I live, to the station. The in-laws picked me up, took me to the hospital, and she'd already had my son. She'd already given birth. I missed the birth by about 2 hours. So that really played on my mind a lot, and I missed a lot. You know, you've only got a child from 1 to 6. After that, they grow up so quick. Do you know what I mean? So I missed a lot. My first boy, Owen, I missed pretty much the best years you can have with your kid through being in the army. And you know, if I wouldn't have had another child with my missus, then I probably would have stayed in, and we, you know, maybe would have got married and stayed in the army. But she got pregnant again while I was training for Iraq. So once she got pregnant and she told me, you know, we were keeping it, that was it. I was like, right, I'm getting out. And that was it for me. I just didn't want to miss those years that I missed with my first son again. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it was a no-brainer. I literally wanted to get out there and then, but with the army, you kind of have to give sort of a 12-month notice kind of thing.
Mm. I've spoken to a few military personnel on the podcast, and they've all actually got quite a similar story. It's this story of leaving, and it leaving this huge hole in their life. It's the brotherhood, it's the camaraderie, it's the purpose, it's the progression. Does that ring true for you as well?
Resonates 100% with me. The thing is, like I said, when I was younger. I've always used training. I started training in my bedroom with weights when I was 15, because I was a skinny, spotty kid. I was, you know, getting picked on. So I was like, oh, sod this. I'm, you know, I'm going to put a bit of muscle on. And, you know, I didn't really put much muscle on. And, I told everyone I was joining the army. They were like, no, you won't join the army. You're too skinny. You know what I mean? You're not strong enough. I started putting house bricks in my backpack and running up to Stafford Castle where I live. So I started doing that training to be in the army, and then literally I joined the army, and you know, I loved it. I loved everything that it stood for. I loved the fact that, you know, you could do so many different things, go so many different places. You know, I've been to Malaysia, training other soldiers. And that was another thing as well. While I was in the army, I became a physical training instructor, which is a 3-month course. So same again, more fitness. Do you know what I mean? I always wanted to push myself physically and mentally. And I think the army gives you every single chance in the world to do that. You know what I mean? And then you come out and it's like you just feel lost because you were like you said, you're just part of this brotherhood and this camaraderie, and there's so many chances and choices to do different courses. And you know, I got my PTI course. I did a selection process for the PTI course. I think I had to do a 3-mile run. This is when we were based at Windsor Castle, near Windsor Castle, in Victoria Barracks. And I think I did a 3-mile run with, £35 with webbing, basically, webbing, rifle. And, I basically beat 20 guys in this 3-miler to, go on selection for my PTI course. So, you know, I've always used fitness. Which is quite weird because when I was in school, like, you know, I didn't want to know about fitness until I got to like that age of 15. So yeah, it was quite weird.
You said you suffered mentally, obviously. Were you ever diagnosed with anything by the doctors or?
No, I mean, I have been told to go and actually get tested for ADHD. And I think it's my personality. This is what I'm trying to tell people is like, they're saying, oh, you should go get checked. And like, well, what difference is it going to make? You know what I mean? If I've got ADHD, I'm not going to take the medication because I don't want the medication. I feel what I'm doing through, you know, exercise, healthy eating, getting good sleep, living, you know, a positive lifestyle. I feel that, you know, that works for me. So the only benefit that I think it would do for me is give me a bit more of an understanding of how my brain works. Like I said to you, you know, when you asked how I feel about, you know, doing Kilimanjaro, normal people would probably say, oh yeah, it's amazing. I'm over the moon. You know, I mean, I'm proud as punch. For me, it's kind of like, I feel a bit down, to be honest. It's over because I've got nothing to look forward to. I always have to have some sort of purpose or some sort of passion, or I'm kind of left wanting.
Oh, absolutely. I think that rings true, especially for men. I think purpose is so important. We're 100%. Creatures of aim. Our whole biological system is set up for the pursuit of achievement. You know, with the dopamine system and all this. This is what we're literally built to do. And when you take that away from people, it's like you have died. It really is. It can just lead to a cascade of other problems.
Comfort kills dream.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When did you decide to sort of turn this around and sort of flip it and become this advocate for mental health?
I'll be honest, it's just sort of happened. I mean, like, you know, I put it out there when I first did the Snowden thing, and I didn't intentionally, you know, mean to become this big, you know, all the fridge man thing, but it kind of just stuck. Like, people just, oh, you're the fridge man. And you know what I mean? It kind of just almost like I've took on this sort of persona, you know what I mean? I've become this character.
And like a superhero.
Or maybe even like an alter ego. Do you know what I mean? You know, this alter ego is I think it's always been there. You know, I've probably always, you know, become different characters throughout my life. You know, joining the army, becoming the soldier, becoming the PTI, leaving the army, becoming the bodybuilder. Do you know what I mean? And then finishing the bodybuilding, becoming almost like a hiker adventurer with my motorhome camper van. And then, you know, I just think when I stopped bodybuilding, I had to fill that void. And that void at the time was I spent 9 months converting a Mercedes Sprinter into a motorhome. And then we literally have travelled all over the UK. We've been around Scotland, you know, we've been around the coast of Scotland 3 times, been pretty much so many different places, so many different mountains. And I think I've become that person for a while to fill that void, you know what I mean? That getting outdoor in nature, and you know what I mean? It's a brilliant tool if you are suffering with your mental health, or if you sadness, depression, anxiety, whatever it is, do you know what I mean? But for normal cases of, you know, mental health in terms of sadness, depression and all that, I think getting out in nature and exercise, so hiking is perfect, you know what I mean? But definitely immersing yourself in nature for me was a big thing once I stopped bodybuilding. And then I think it almost got to the point by, 2 years of doing that, I think it come to a point there where it was like that competitive edge that I still had from bodybuilding, that I wasn't scratching that itch. Do you know what I mean? I kind of went 2 years without having any sort of competition or any sort of drive to do something. Obviously, I think that's what led me to think, right, I'm gonna do something for charity. I'm gonna raise some money. And then, always me sort of being in touch with how I am. I've always kind of tried to be in touch with my own kind of emotions and that kind of thing. So, I just spoke to the wife and said, I'm thinking of doing this. And the idea with the fridge almost become like, I needed something. I just said, I need to carry something. You know, like people carry the weight on their shoulders. That's what I said to my wife. I was like, when people are struggling, they're carrying that weight on their shoulders. It feels like they're carrying the world on their shoulders. I need something to symbolize. And then, I remember a couple of the lads that I served with in the Grenadier Guards had ran half marathons with fridges on their backs. So, and I've seen quite a few squaddies do it. It seems to be a thing to do, but I've never actually seen anyone use it as a metaphor for something. Do you know what I mean? As a symbolic thing to represent, like I said, the burden of poor mental health. So that's kind of how the idea come about. And then the thinking of how to actually create it, how to make it comfortable to hike with and put weight in. So yeah, it was, I, in the end, I found a US Army Alice pack, and this US Army Alice pack, it's perfect. It's a metal frame. It's got, added satchels on the back of it. So I've just ripped the satchels off. I drilled some holes through it. All right. If I drill that through the fridge, I can put some bolts through it, put some massive washers so it doesn't pull through, obviously, because it's plastic inside the fridge. And then, made a steel bracket for the bottom and, bolted it to that, which the actual carry frame with the steel bracket is about 3 or 4 kilo on its own.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So obviously it needs to be strong. So yeah. And then I just used a ratchet strap to go around the door and round the rest of the frame, just to give it that bit more of a security to stop it ripping through the fridge. And yeah, that's how it was born.
Yeah, how annoyed does your wife get that she hasn't got a fridge to put all her the food in and stuff then? Like, you're not taking the one from your kitchen, I assume.
No. It was quite a funny story actually, because I was actually sitting with a friend who owns an old army friend, my mate Martin, who owns a vape shop down the road. And I was sitting there with him one day and we were chatting. And I was telling him, because he actually has got severe PTSD and he really suffers. And actually, just before I started training for this challenge, he tried to take his own life. So for me, it was even more important to do it. Do you know what I mean? And we were sat there in his shop. And I was just like, I need a fridge. He's like, do you need a fridge? I think I'm gonna carry a fridge up Snowdon. But I need to find a fridge. He's like, I've got a small fridge, an old fridge in the back. Literally went and looked, like, yeah, that'll do. And there you go. I said, I've got a fridge. But literally I took it home and I just looked at it and I was like, right, I'm gonna do it. Found the US Army Alice pack. Rest is history. 2 years ago,
I've spoken to, again, I've spoken to other military personnel, and another common theme is that they know more people that have died by suicide than have actually died in battle.
100%.
How much has this fridge been? How has it helped open up conversations with people about sort of mental health? Have you had people approaching you? Have people opened up to you? Has it been a good tool of helping people actually talk about this subject?
Yeah, 100%. Like I said to you, it does what it says on the tin. I needed something to represent the burden of poor mental health and something to get people talking about mental health. And I don't know if you've seen the sides of the fridge. it's covered in mental health phrases with like suicide, depression, anxiety, PTSD, and just trigger words. Do you know what I mean? To get people thinking. And literally, I've been training in Brecon. I've been hiking up, you know, big steep hills, and I'm overtaking people, and people are looking at me and they're like, oh, fair play. You know what I mean? I know what you're doing it for. Other people have actually come up to me. I had a lady come up to me in Brecon as well. And, she pretty much was nearly in tears. And she said, you know, I thank you. She gave me a hug and she like thanked me for what I was doing. Anyway, I didn't really think much of it. You know, I just thought, oh, you know, really nice lady. Anyway, I got back. She found me on social media that night and sent me a message saying she tried to take her own life 3 months ago and hiking has saved her life. Do you know what I mean? Like, so for me, that was just, you know, heart wrenching to read them kind of messages. And I've had quite a lot of them as well. But like you said, with, you know, with being ex-military as well, you know, I know so many blokes who've tried to take their own lives and people that have took their own lives. And I'm going to be honest, I know people in every single stage of my life that have tried to take or have taken their own lives. My dad, it actually opened up the conversation with me and my dad. I knew growing up, my dad suffered with his mental health, but I never really knew why. You know what I mean? We never really had that conversation. And after I did the 3-peak challenge last year in April, and I completed that one, we sat down, you know, we had a word together, and he actually explained to me, you know, why he suffers. And I was horrified, you know, to think what he's gone through, and he's now 67 and he's still here. I mean, for me, like, he's my biggest hero. The fact that he, you know, he is still alive and kicking, because at the age of 9, he watched his brother get run over by a train trying to save his dog. And then I think 6 months later, he said his dad passed away, dropped dead, broken heart, they say, with obviously the death of his son. And then 18 months later, his mum got with a guy who was abusive to her and used to beat her up. So by the age of 11, my dad had been through all this, he'd seen all this, and obviously, you know, he's all he's known is trauma and hurt. And he got into a fight with his at the time stepdad and ended up running away, living in a field in a tent. And when the police finally caught with him, he ended up getting sectioned almost, if that's what it was back in those days. And he spent a lot of time in and out of you know, mental institutions. And by the age of 12, he tried to take his own life.
By 12? And
12 years old. And my dad suffered with his mental health in and out of mental institutions from the age of 12 till he had my brother at the age of 25. And as soon as he had my brother, it was like, oh, it's all gone now. You know what I mean? He's had to become a man. He's, you know, he's keeping a job down. He meets my mum, obviously, and he's had my brother, and he's just obviously a normal family man. But me growing up, you know, watching him, I now understand his behaviours. Do you know what I mean? I would just remember him being such a hard worker for his family. He was, you know, doing shift work. He'd worked nights for like 15 years. And every single day after he finished his shift, like most men in the 80s and 90s, do you know what I mean? Like, especially in the 90s. When I was growing up, as soon as they finish work, they go down the pub and they have a few beers. Well, my dad would go to the pub every single day after work. And, you know, I just thought it was normal because that's what all the dads were doing, you know, back then. But actually, now I look back, you know, I kind of realise it was to forget everything, you know, that's gone on in his life. And, you know, he still struggles to this day. He's still very much a defeatist kind of man, do you know what I mean? Like, he always kind of says when something goes wrong, it's always like, oh, don't worry about it, it's me, it always happens to me. And that's his attitude all the time. And, you know, it's hard to snap him out of it, you know what I mean? Because he's just, all he's experienced is trauma and hurt. So, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's all around me. That's what I'll say. You know, I've known people from school, from the army, from bodybuilding, in the gym. I've known so many different people try or actually take their own lives. So for me, it's a massive problem that ain't going away. For men, definitely ain't going away. 75% of all suicides are men. So, and only 36% of people who ask for help, who actually ask for medical help, are men. Now, that's kind of a backward statistic. Do you know what I mean? So that should be 80% of people asking for help should be men. Do you know what I mean? So I think if I can do something that helps my brain physically and mentally, then and help other people at the same time, it's a win-win for me. You know what I mean? I can sleep at night. My conscience is clear. My heart is pure. So, yeah, I'm kind of, you know, hitting two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I think the most important thing about the message you're sharing is this sort of this challenge, this setting yourself a goal, this purpose. Again, it's so important for men to have something to work towards. Like you said, with your father, he got to 25, he had a child, and it's almost like it went away. It's because he's now got a focus. There's something more important than him.
He's got to actually, like you said, he's got a focus. He's got a child now. He's got to look after him. But, you know, because he never had, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of help out there now, let's be honest. But there was nothing out there when my dad was 25. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, for me to create a service with this money that I've raised, and that's another, you know, a new announcement as well. The money that I've actually raised for North Staff's Mind, it is now actually, basically, the charity has spoke to the CEO for me, and they want to work with me, and they want to use this money to create a service that isn't already there, if you know what I mean. So they can use this money to create a service that is needed. So they want to open up a men's only mental health talking group in the Staffordshire area in the name of what I've done. So
well done,
me,
congrats.
Yeah, so for me, like, that is me seeing the fruits of my labour, the hard work, you know. I always say hard work pays off. Just keep working, keep working. And for me, I think I can't, that is one thing I can be proud of. Do you know what I mean? I struggle to give myself credit, but I think I can give myself credit for that, because I can see that I'm making a difference, especially if, you know, it helps if men come to this talking group, and it helps, and I can encourage men to start taking on challenges. You know, they don't have to do it publicly. They can, you know, just losing a bit of weight, getting fit, you know, climbing a mountain, or anything, just something to give, like you say, give men a purpose and give them something to aim for.
Yeah, that's it. They don't have to go out and buy a fridge, strap it to the back, and climb to the top of Kilimanjaro. They don't have to do that. Only nutters do that. But start small. Something. They just need to start small. It has to be achievable, and they have to go out, and then they can just build upon it.
Set small goals, ain't it? I mean, you know, I didn't just wake up one day and decide to carry a bloody bridge with a metal frame on my back. At the end of the day, I've trained all my life. Since I was 15, I'm 40 in August. So, do you know what I mean? I've pretty much trained for nearly 25 years. Started training in my bedroom at 15, like I said. I've carried weight in the army, so it's my bread and butter. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what we did. We moved across uneven ground quickly with weight. That is, you know, that's what a tab is, what we call tabbing, tactical advance to battle. You're moving quickly across ground with weight on your back. So I've already, you know, I've already had experience carrying weight anyway. And that coupled with my bodybuilding background, with, you know, doing lots of heavy squats, lots of heavy deadlifts, you know, I've deadlifted 280 kilo in, you know, in my past. I've squatted 240. So I've built a lot of strength in my legs and my back to do what I've done with the fridge. So, to what some people might think is hard, for me, it's just, you know, it's normal.
Yeah, but you've built up over a long period of time to get to that point, isn't it? It's small steps, isn't it? Small steps.
Of course it is.
Are you aware of a challenge athlete called Max Glover?
No.
No, he's from South Wales. He's actually a friend of Rockman and everything. He carried a piano on his back up Garth Mountain in South Wales. Did you ever see that?
I've heard of that. I did hear it, yeah.
Now, I reckon you should get in touch with him because I reckon there's a good business opportunity there for a furniture removal company. You could team up. It'd be awesome. Yeah. Now, you said you can never feel happy about your current achievements. You've always focusing on the next thing. What is the next thing for Michael Copeland?
I've got a few little challenges this year in terms of helping other people. I believe, you know, I'm not saying I've gained a massive following, but, you know, the following I have gained over the last, you know, month, 2 months, you know, it's just gone crazy. It's shot up massively. So for me, the thing that I don't like about social media is social media, especially Instagram and the like of, it can be a very selfish platform to promote yourself. Do you know what I mean? And I get that. You know what I mean? You have to, if you want to, you're promoting a brand or whatever. But I believe as well, why can't you use it to do good as well? Do you know what I mean? And there's not as much selfless things on there. So I am going to do a couple of challenges with other people throughout the year, which is great for me because it takes all the planning and that was the hardest thing for me with this challenge, to be honest, is the planning, talking to different sponsors, constantly back and forth to the charity, constantly back and forth with the travel company, and constantly back and forth with people in Tanzania trying to sort a fridge out. Do you know what I mean? So it was quite mentally draining for me to be talking to all these different people all the time. So for me, just to sit back and let someone else organise an event, me just turn up on the day with my fridge and go, all right, there we go, what are we doing? Do you know what I mean? It's going to be a nice surprise. But no, there's one I'm doing in June with an old army friend. He's kind of roped me into doing it. We're raising awareness. We're not raising awareness. We're raising money for a young lad who needs life-saving treatment. He needs 25 grand. To go over to Italy and get this new treatment. So that involves climbing a mountain. You'd be in Wales, I'm sure you've heard of it, the Snowdon Horseshoe via, I'm going to pronounce this wrong. I don't want to pronounce it wrong via Cribgoch.
Yeah, that was all right, Cribgoch, yeah.
Yeah, that's all right. So, you know, via Cribgoch and the Snowdon Horseshoe. There's about 40 bare knuckle boxers and fighters all doing it at the same time, which is going to be mayhem. But obviously, I'm a bit more familiar with the mountains than they are, so I'm going to sort of almost be their guide with a fridge on my back. That is going to be a challenge in itself as well. If the wind's bad, I'm obviously not going to do it. But doing crib in wind with a fridge on your back is obviously dangerous. So that'll be another mental challenge for me to conquer if the wind is okay. So yeah, I'm doing that. I've also been roped into another challenge where 50 guys are also raising awareness for mental health and they're carrying a ton of sand to the top of Snowdon. So I think they're all carrying like a 20 kilo sack of sand each in a Bergen or whatever. So I'm going to put the 20 kilo sack of sand in my 19 kilo fridge.
Oh my God.
And do it with them and give them a bit of moral support. And also there's another mental health charity called Primal Instinct. They're doing something called the 24 for 24 on the Reekin in Shropshire, little hill, not really a mountain, but they're doing 24 trips up and down the Reekin in 24 hours. So I said, I'll join them for a day and do a few stints up and down with them, give them a bit of motivation. So yeah, you know, lots of little things. In terms of me doing another event, there is definitely going to be another event. I think it's already set in stone. Do you know what I mean? The amount of awareness that I've raised, and I think the amount of people that have contacted me and told me, you know, what you're doing is making a difference and helping people. I'm not going to say I feel obliged to do it, but I do kind of feel that sometimes in life, when doors open, you have to walk through them and grab every opportunity that you can. Do you know what I mean? And for me, someone who who does struggle to sit still and struggles to with overthinking a lot. And, you know, I do suffer with self-worth sometimes. And when I tell people that, it's quite funny. I get a lot of different reactions because people say, oh, hang on, ain't you been a bodybuilder standing on stage in a pair of pants? You know what I mean? And you've been in the army. And it's like, yeah, but the reason why I do these challenges and why I do train and why I do compete and why I've done all what I've done is because it makes me feel good. You know what I mean? I'm searching for them natural, healthy, positive habits, them natural dopamine highs. Instead of sniffing coke up my nose or getting levered every weekend or doing whatever, I'm doing positive things. You know what I mean? And I'm getting my highs from that. And it, you know, if that makes me a bad person for chasing those highs, then I'm a bad person. But for me, that's the way I've always lived my life. And that's the way I'm going to carry on living my life. So.
Yeah, totally agree. That's why I do challenges as well. It's a lot to do with self-worth. It gives me self-worth. It proves to myself that I am worthy of something.
Yeah.
So I completely get it. Completely understand.
Yeah. And that's something I always say to people as well. Like some people say, oh, you know, why try and prove something? You ain't got nothing to prove to no one. I'm like, I ain't proving anything to anyone. I don't care what people think anymore. I've got past that. You know what I mean? I cared what people think when I was in my 20s. Now I'm nearly 40. I don't really care about, you know, what anyone thinks of me. And if I did, I wouldn't be able to do this. Mm. But for me, I care. I have morals for myself. I have high standards for myself. It's called self-worth. It's called respect. You know what I mean? Dignity. And I think some people are lacking that. And that's why they don't put themselves out there, because they're scared or feared of being judged. Whereas I just don't really care anymore. I've given myself that much confidence by picking a goal, executing that goal, training for it, and then doing it because I constantly go up for myself. I find that there's no better confidence than that. I always say the best relationship you should have is the one with yourself. And by creating a good relationship with yourself, you have to stop letting yourself down. If you put it out there, right, I'm gonna lose 10 pounds. I'm feeling a bit tubby. I'm going to lose 10 pounds. If you then, a week later, jack in on your diet and go, oh, I can't be arsed. You're teaching yourself how you want to be treated. You know what I mean? Like, if you had this is what I say to some people. If you had a best friend and that best friend kept saying, right, we'll go out for a meal Friday, or we'll go do this Friday. Yeah, Sam, doesn't show up. Does it again the weekend after. Does it again the weekend after. Does it again. You won't be friends with this guy for very long, would you? Because he's letting you down constantly. And it's okay to do it to yourself, though. And that's trying to get that through to people. You know what I mean? It's a hard message to get across.
Yeah, it's hard. Where can people find you?
On Instagram, I am obviously the Fridge Man. So very easy. I'm also on Facebook as Michael Copeland. Recently started TikTok, but to be honest, I've just been so busy with, obviously, I kind of find it hard and stressful to deal with both.
And you've got to learn all those dance moves then as well.
I'm not all about that. But no, you know, I kind of feel, you know, on Instagram, you know, I've been on Instagram for a while, so I'm used to that. So, you know, most of the stuff I post, it's on Instagram. So, yeah, if they want to find me on Instagram, then The Fridge Man.
Thank you very much for your time, Michael.
No,
I think what you're doing is really honourable, and you're clearly making a difference and having a big impact. So I wish you all the best of luck for the future with it, and I hope it continues for as long as it can.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Have a good one.
Remember, this podcast is brought to you by Rockman, the ultimate running challenge platform. At Rockman, we offer free weekly running challenges inspired by the world's most infamous fitness tests to test your limits and help you build your mental resilience around your everyday life without restriction. There's no fixed schedules, there's no far-off travel, there's no extortionate entry fees. All you need is a pair of running shoes and to remember where you live. So if you're craving a different kind of challenge, or if you're suffering the strain of a lack of time and motivation, Rockman is the answer for you. You can get started right now for free by clicking the link in the show notes below.